Okay, we're beginning here in the bottom of Mem Tet, Amud Bet, right after the Mishnah. Yesterday we read the statement of Shmuel, which is, Amar Shmuel, Olam al yotzi adam et etzmo min haklal. It's better to include yourself rather than to exclude yourself. In our Mishnah, we had seen two options for benching. One was Nivarech, which is including the individual who is making the request. The other possibility was Barchu, instructing the others to give bracha towards Hashem. And we saw in the Tosafot, why would you give preference to Baruch Hu of Nevarech? Because Baruch Hu is a tzivui, something that's a command, a direct command, whereas Nevarech is more of a passive nitilat rishut. So despite that fact, Shmuel says that we're going to opt for you, including yourself, in the bracha. So the question is our Mishnah. It's not. Shlosha b'hu omer Baruch Hu. Our Mishnah says when there are four people there, you say Baruch Hu. Ema af barchu. When you say barchu, it doesn't mean that that's what you should say. It means that you could say that. Umikom akom nivarech adif. Nevertheless, nivarech is better. Now the question of whether the adif is in the girsa or not. Because if the Mishnah says barchu, then they're giving the option to do barchu. Now is nivarech on the same level as barchu, which is what it seems the Gemara is saying. You have two options, either nivarech or barchu. And we're going to opt for Nivarech, because they're on the equal level, better to include yourself. Rashi does not have the Girsa Adif. Tosfot says, Lav Davka Adif. Doesn't mean really better. Elok Yadadei Ninu. They're equal. And he shows that there are other places in Shas where the word Adif is used, not to mean preferential or better, but on an equal plane. And so that's what it means over here. So, Al-Khanami Kamar Nivarech Hashuv Kamo Baruchu. Nivarech is the same level as Baruchu. Lufikach Lo Yotzi Atzom Menakla. Therefore, if you're on an equal plane between Baruchu and Nivarech, you should opt for the one that includes you, because that's a better outcome. Dam Rav Ada Barav Amrei Beirav Tanina. We have a Mishnah, Vav Nechlakim Adyud. When it comes between 6 and 10 people, they can break up into multiple chaburot of 3. Iyamart Bishlama Nivarech Adif. If you suggest that Nivarech is on an equal plane with Baruchu, Mishumachi Nechlakim, that makes sense. If you take 6 people and you split them into 2, that means you get 3 and 3. If you think that Barhu is better, then how could you have 6 people break up into 3 and 3? That means you've eliminated the ability to say Barhu now. You'd want to keep it only at 8, would you be able to split up, because then you'd have 4 and 4, and you'd be able to say Barhu. The fact that you could split up at 6 and go to 3 and 3 is an indication that Nevarech is just as good as Baruch. Shemachit Nechlakim, Elai Amar Barhu Adif, Amai Nechlakim. Elav Shemamina, Nevarech Adif, Shemamina. And Nevarech is better, equal to Baruch Hu. And again, we're going to opt for Nevarech because that includes you in the bracha, like the statement of Shmuel. Tanya Nam Yochev, we have a brayta that supports this. Ben Shemar Baruch Hu, Ben Shemar Nevarech, En Tofsim Oto Akach. Whether you said Baruch Hu or Nevarech, we don't stop you on that. They don't jump on him to stop him. Vaha Nakdanim, or Nugnakim, Den Tofsim Oto Akach. The people who are very meductic on every little detail, they stop on this, because the proper, the better way to say it is Nivarech. The way a person makes his brachot, we are aware of the fact that they are a Talmud Chacham or not. Ketzad. What are these options? Rabbi Omer, Uv Tuvo. Harize Talmud Chacham. When you bench, and you say the Lashon of Uv Tuvo, that's the proper way to do it, that's a Talmud Chacham. Umi Tuvo. But if you say mituvo or is it boor, that's someone who is ignorant. The difference being that when you say Baruch Shachal Mishlo Uv Tuvo Chayinu, Uv Tuvo means all of his goodness. Mituvo means some or part of his goodness. I'm only a buyer of Dimi Vaktiv. So doesn't it say in the Pasuk,
when Hashem is informing David that he will not build the Mikdash, but rather his son, and he says all these wonderful things about Malchut Beit David, David concludes the response to what Hashem says. It says, "Vata ho'el avarechet Beit Avducho liot le'olam lefanecha, ki ata Hashem Elokim, dibarta umibirchatcho yivorach Beit Avducho le'olam."
Umibirchatcho yivorach Beit Avodecha. And from your bracha, you should give to Beit Avodecha, the house of your servant. So over there, here a person's making a request to give a bracha. And when he makes the request to the king, he says, mi birkatcha. That isn't the proper way to ask. You're supposed to say, u birkatcha, not u mi birkatcha. So my says, wait, the old one, b'sheila shiny, says, wait a minute, that's when a person's making a request. When you're beseeching or making a request, you don't ask for the whole kid in kabuldo. You just ask for a little bit. You say, u mi birkatcha, can I have a little bit of the bracha? You don't overstep your bounds. And when you're making requests, that's okay. But when you're praising, when you're giving Sheva for Hoda, then you go all out. And you say Uv Tuvo and not Mi Tuvo. B'sheila namikdiv. By Sheila Ross it says, Harchev picha v'maleyu. Open up your mouth wide v'maleyu and I will fill it with bracha. Gemara says, how about divrei Torah k'tiv? That's not really written by bracha, that's written by divrei Torah. That's different. When we're dealing with divrei Torah, that's a different request than making a request for some personal benefit, some personal goodness that the king will bestow upon you. Over there, you have to be shy, you have to be reticent, you have to do it in a way that it's not asking for everything. But when it comes to Torah, there we say, Harchev picha v'maleihu. Fill all of my wants, all of my desires, when it comes to Torah, that's a fair request. That's okay to ask it in that manner. Tanya Rabbi Omer, bituvo chayinu. Arizeh Talmud Chacham. If you say, Baruch Shechal Mishalo, uvtuvo chayinu, that is proper. Chayim, arizeh bur. But instead, if you use chayim, instead of chayinu, that's someone who is ignorant. So Rashi explains why. It's the same problem we have with Baruch Hu versus Nevarech, which is, deotzi otzmo min haklal. Zeh Shechal Mishalo, uvtuvo chayinu. Chayinu means all of us, all of our lives. But if you say, mituvo mechayim, it sounds like it's from your lives, or from the lives, not from yourself included. So that's why there's a difference. Nar Blai matne ipcho. Nar Blai had it just the opposite. They switched it between chayinu and chayim. Leit hilchotak in Nar Blai. Halacha is not like them. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, nivarech shechalnu mishalo, arizet amut chacham. Proper way to say this is, nivarech shechalnu mishalo, mi shechalnu mishalo, arizet bur. And the one that we ate from, that is someone who is ignorant. So again, the difference being, Nevarech she'achalnu mishelo, mashmashu yichidi, she'achol ochli mishelo. Sounds like God is the only one. And Nevarech she'achalnu mishelo, we're eating from that which He grants us. On the other hand, if you write it, the me she'achalnu mishelo, sounds like there are multiple people. And this happens to be one of the people that you are praising. I mean, Hashem is one of many. And therefore, we're giving praise, the Misha Chalm Mishal, to the one that we
ate
from. Or, the other possibility is that he's directing it towards the Balabait. Doesn't sound like you're directing it to Hashem, but rather towards the Balabait. So, Nevarech Shechal Mishalo is clearly directed at Hashem, and only the one Hashem. There's nobody else who gives. And already you enter in this idea, the Misha Chalm Mishalo, the Mi already says one of many. So that can mean God is one of many, or it can mean that we're referring to the Balabait, who's also a giver, or the one who granted you food here. So that would be inappropriate. So Amar Lei, Ravacha Brei the Rova, the Ravashiva, Amrinan, the Misha Asal Avotenu Velanu et Kol Anisim Ha'edu. Don't we say in the Haggadah, the Misha Asal Avotenu Velanu et Kol Anisim Ha'edu? So over there you do use the term Lemi. So that if the term Lemi is problematic, then why are you using it over here? Amarle, hotam mukhcha milta. Over there, it's clear that the reference, or the antecedent to the me, is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because the context in which you're reading it is clearly a time by Hashem. Man avid nisei. Who's the one who makes miracles? Who does miracles? Kudsha b'richu. It's gotta be Hashem. So then when you say, Misha asal avotenu v'lanu etkol nisim ha'elu, it's clear that you're referencing Hashem and no one else. On the other hand, in our case, it's not clear what the context is, because there is no mention of Hashem's name. You just say, Nevarech, the Mi, Shechalnu Mishalo. The Mi over there is not defined. Zamer Rabbi Yochanan, Baruch Shechalnu Mishalo, Arizeh Talmud Chacham. Alamazon Shechalnu, Arizeh Bur. Rabbi Yochanan says, if you say Baruch Shechalnu Mishalo, that's the right way to say it. Alamazon Shechalnu, for the food that we ate, that is problematic. And again, because you didn't say Mishalo from him, from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Again, you're lacking a reference point, and therefore someone could interpret Amazon Shechalnu to refer either to another power or to the Balabait. And then Rabuna Abrei the Reb Shua says, Lo Amran El Begimel, Telek Hashem Shemayim. That's only true when you're only using three. Abasara, De'ik Hashem Shemayim Uchcha Milta. Once you have 10 and you say Elokeinu, then you no longer have this problem. Because once you add in Elokeinu, it's like the case in the Haggadah, where it's clear who you're referring to. Because if you say, Baruch Elokeinu, She'achalnu, then you know you ate from Elokeinu. Mishalo would be unnecessary at that point, because of course Mishalo is from Elokeinu. And the other thing is true, I think, as well, which was the previous statement, which is if you say, Baruch Elokeinu, the Mishachalnu Mishalo, even though it's not good grammar, that if you said it in that way, the Mi would also not be problematic in that sense, because it would be referencing the Elokeinu. And so therefore, there where it's mukha milsa, it's not such a big deal. Kitznan. Ki inyan shu mevrech, ta'echoni macharav. And this is like the Mishnah that we said, the way that he leads, they answer. Baruch Hashem, okay, Israel, okay, Tzfakot, Yoshev Kurim, Alamazon, Sheachalnu. So whatever the leader leads with, Nevarech, Sheachalnu, Mishalo, then they respond, Baruch, Sheachalnu, Mishalo. Or, Nevarech, Lelukenu, Sheachalnu, Mishalo, they can say, Baruch, Lelukenu, Sheachalnu, Mishalo. So whatever he leads with, they follow. And again, if you're using Elokeinu, once you have Elokeinu in there, the reference or who you're speaking about is clear. Once it's clear, then some of these nuances aren't as important. The me, shalom, those aren't as important anymore because it's clear who the reference is.
And that's why in the Mishnah it says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael Elokei Tzvakot Yoshev Kruvim Al Hamazon Sheachalnu. And it does not have Mishalo there because Mishalo is not necessary when you already know the context of whom you're speaking about, because the lead-in was Hashem Elokei Yisrael Elokei Tzvakot Yoshev Kruvim. It's very clear. We need Mishalo really when we don't have that Mukha Milta.
We still say it in the proper way. When we say Nevarech Elokeinu Sheachalnu Mishalo, Baruch Elokeinu Sheachalnu Mishalo, because there's no reason not to use the better Lashon, even when you're using Elokeinu. So therefore, our bracha follows the pattern, or all the suggestions that are made here, of a Talmud Chacham, which is that we use Uvtuvo, Chayinu, Mishalo, and Sheachalnu Mishalo, and not Lemishachalnu Mishalo. Echad Asara, Echad Asara Ribo. So the Mishnah says that it doesn't make a difference whether you have 10 or 100,000. Where it says Agufakasha. The Mishnah seems to have a non sequitur. It first says, say this for 3, this for 10. Then it says from 10 to 100,000 makes no difference. Then it just goes on. It says, for 10 you do this, for 100 you do this, for 1,000 you do this, 10,000 you do this. I thought you just said there's no difference between 10 and 100,000. So how come the Mishnah breaks with that statement and then goes on to say just the opposite of what that statement says? So the Gemara says, well, there's different authors to our Mishnah. The Mishnah includes both the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva. And that's what it says. Agufa kamarsha marta achad asara v'achad asara ribo alma ki adad eninu. There's no difference. V'aretani b'mei omer, be'elef omer, b'ribo omer. You say with 100, 1,000, 10,000, you say something different. I'm Rabbi Yossi v'lokasha, I'm Rabbi Yossi Aglili, I'm Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yossi Aglili is the author of the opinion that differentiates. Rabbi Akiva is the author of the opinion that says there is no differentiation. Tetzman, our Mishnah continues to say, Rabbi Yossi omer, the fi rov akal heim v'varchim, shnemar makelot v'archu elokim. That's what the Mishnah says, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili gives the reason why at different numbers you change the way you make the bracha. So, Amar Rabbi Kiva, Ma Metzina, Beit HaKnesset, Rabbi Kiva, Aikra, the Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Ma Abidei. What does he do with the Pasuk of Makelot, where Chuelo came? He violated Ketanya, he needs it for the bright. How do we know that? Even fetuses inside their mother's womb sang Shira on the Yam. Shneemar, Makelot, where Chuelo came, Hashem, Mimkor Yisrael. So Mimkor means from the Mikor. Mikor is another word for the Rechem, for the womb. So B'makelot, Baruch Hu Elokim, the multitudes gave bracha to Hashem, Mimkor Yisrael, even when they were in the Mikor, even when they were in the womb. V'idach, and Rabbi Yosef Galili has both limudim. He'll say, I learned that out from Mimkor. That's the one limud about the fetuses. And the other limud is from the beginning of the pasuk, which is B'makelot, Baruch Hu Elokim. That when multitudes, the numbers change, Baruchu, there's different ways to give bracha to Hashem. So Amar Rava, Alocha, Rabbi Akiva. The Alocha is like Rabbi Akiva, we don't differentiate once we reach over the number of 10. Ravina, Rav Chama, Barbuzi, Iklo, the Bei Reish Galuta. They went to the house of the exilarch. Kam, Rav Chama, Kamahadar, Bei Meya. Chama was going around to make sure that he had 100. You know, like when you go around trying to make sure you have a minion, he was making sure that he had 100 people there so he could say the larger bracha. Amale Ravina, Lo Tzricha. You don't have to do that. Hachi Amar Rava, Alocha, Rabbi Akiva. The Alocha is like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore 10 and 100 make no difference. Amar Rava, ki achlina and rifta beirish galuta. We ate or broke bread with the exilarch, revachina and gimel gimel. We broke up into smaller groups of 3 and 3 and benched and did zimun together. And that's problematic because they had a much larger group. They had a larger group, they already had reached the point of Shem Hashem. They had Shem Hashem of 10, how could they break down into groups of 3 and 3? So that's Gemara asks, Levarchu Yud Yud. They should have broken up into groups of 10s. So Shama Reish Galuta V'Ikpid. That the Reish Galuta would hear them doing this, and they'd get upset that they were benching by themselves. Not proper etiquette. It was not proper for them to bench in that way. V'Nifku B'Birkata the Reish Galuta. Then why are they allowed to break up at all? If that's the case, you can't just say because the Reish Galuta was Makbid, so therefore they did 3, and they gave up the ability to Zimun with the Shem Hashem. Why were they doing that then? They should wait around. Either the Avshu, Kuliyama, Lo Shame. Problem was that there were too many people. There was too large a group there, and therefore, Lo Shame, they did not hear it. They couldn't hear the benching. They didn't have microphones in those days. So the person who led the benching, when he had such a large group of individuals, they couldn't hear the benching. So Mimon of Shach, they weren't going to be Yotze. because they're not going to hear the person who's benching when he said the Shem Hashem. So better for them to do a Zimun by threes instead of doing a Zimun with the greater group where they wouldn't hear it. They wouldn't be a part of the Zimun. People.
Yes,
was close to
100.
Oh, no, but that was the problem, that the Reish Galuta would hear it and get very upset. He wouldn't allow them to do that. He heard that they were breaking off and doing it by themselves. Everybody together, that's the proper etiquette in the meal. He invites you over to have a meal with them, you bench with him. The fact that you would break away and do your own thing, that was considered to be inappropriate. Right, you should have done 10 and 10. Problem was that in the circumstance, they couldn't do 10 because of the hakpado of the Reish Galuta, so therefore they had to opt for 3 and 3. Why didn't they stay with the group? It's because they wouldn't have gained anything by staying with the group, because they wouldn't have heard the Zimun. So, Amar Rabba Tosfa, Hani Gimel, the Krache, Rifta Badode, three people break bread together. Kodim Chad Minayu Borich, Ladate, one of them goes ahead and benches by himself. Inu Nafkin Bezimun Didei, so then they can have a Zimun. The three of them have a Zimun. They are Yotze. The two that did not bench yet, they're Yotze the Zimun. Iu Lau Nafki Bezimun Didhu, but he doesn't gain the Zimun. Fishain Zimun Lamafreya. Can't do a Zimun retroactively. If you benched already, retroactively, you can't do the Zimun. So Tzvi says, what are you talking about? How can they do it one way, not the other? That's the difficulty here. We don't pass in this way the halacha, which is, right. Since he was obligating Zimun, the two can include him in their Zimun, even though he has benched already. But it won't work the other way around. What you're pointing out is that there's an inconsistency here. If he can't do Zimun the Mafreya, then it should be no good for him and no good for them. And that's the way we pass on the halacha. If someone benches, there's no Zimun the Mafreya, that means they can't be included for either party. They're not good either way. Rabbi Tosfa wants to differentiate and say that this person loses out for themselves because they benched already, but the other two do not lose out because there was an obligation that devolved upon all three of them at once. He can't walk away from them. So he can't walk away from them. He can't not have their chiyuv be discharged. Again, we don't pass in this way the halacha. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Rafa ben Bar Papa ikla the Beit Knishta, the Abi Giber, went to the shul in this location. Kam Kora b'Sifra. He went up and he was reading
in the Sefer Torah.
V'amar Baruch Hu Hashem v'Ishtik. Said Baruch Hu Hashem and didn't finish off. V'amar Hamivorach. He didn't add the extra word Hamivorach. Avshu Kulu Yalma. The response from the people was, B'chuat Hashem HaMivarach. Amarova, Patya Ukma, you black cauldron, you black kli. B'hadi Plukto Lomloch, what are you sticking your head into this machloket? In Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva argue in the Mishnah about whether you should say B'chuat Hashem or B'chuat Hashem HaMivarach. So why are you sticking your head in there and trying to do like Rabbi Akiva and say just B'chuat Hashem? Do like Rabbi Shmuel, B'chuat Hashem HaMivarach. Vod, Hano Galmak, Rabbi Shmuel. On top of that, the minhag olam already is like Rabbi Shmuel to say Baruch Hu Hashem Mivarach. So why are you sticking your head in there? Plus, you're going against the minhag olam. In terms of sticking your head in there, we know that Rabbi Akiva agrees to the position of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva says Baruch Hu Hashem works, but he doesn't disagree with Rabbi Shmuel that Baruch Hu Hashem Mivarach is just as good or not better. So why are you opting to say Baruch Hu Hashem if you can say Mivarach and anybody will say Lechula Delot? Plus, that's the minhag olam. So why opt out?
Also, Tosafot points out yesterday the importance of saying Amivorach, because over here, lo nichlal etzmo. When you say Baruch Hu, that's what we said in the Mishnah that Shmuel doesn't like. He wants you to say Nivareich rather than Baruch Hu. But over here, we're saying Baruch Hu et Hashem. But when you say Hamivorach, you're including yourself in that because you're saying Amivorach, which includes you. And so Tosafot says that's the importance of Mivorach in this case.
Gimel shachlu kachat. Three people eat together. Einan rishayim lechalek. They can't break up. V'chein dalet, v'chein chamisha. You can't do it. Four or five. Three, four, five. They have to stay together because they have a zimun and they can't break up the zimun. Vav nechlakim ad asara. From 6 until 10, meaning 6, 7, 8, 9, they can break up into smaller groups of three. And that's what we proved before, that there's no difference between 3 and 4, because here the Mishnah says you can break up 6 into 2 groups of 3. Asara in Echlakim ad Chaf. If you have 10 people, you can't break them up until you have 20. Because then they can break up into groups of 10. So once you reach 10, you have an obligation to say the Shem Hashem. If you break down into smaller groups, you won't have the Shem Hashem anymore. Shtei Chaburot, Sheyu Ochlot Vayit Echad. You have 2 groups eating in a single house. As Manch Miktatzan Roim Elu et Elu, when part of each group can see each other, Elu Mitztafim leZimun. They are Mitztaref to a single Zimun. Vim Lav, Elum zamim neatzman, ve'elum zamim neatzman. They have to bench and to do zimun separately. Ein mevarchim al yayin eshitin l'tochumayim. You can't make a bracha on wine until you put water in it, until you dilute it. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Chumim amim mevarchim. The chumim say you can't be mevarech. Okay, Maika Mashulan. What is our Mishnah teaching us? Tanina Chadazimna, we already had the previous Mishnah, which said, Gimel Shachukechad Chayvim Lazamein. Three people eat together are obligated to do a Zimun. All our Mishnah says it formulates it in the negative form. Before it was in the positive form, which is three who eat together must bench together. And now all it says is, three people who eat together may not break up. So why do you have to say the same thing twice? Once in the positive form, once in the negative form. So Mar says, Akamashmalan, Kihad Amar Rabbi Ava Bar Shmua, Gimel Shiyashvu Lechol Kachat, Vadayin Lo Achlu, Inan Rishayim Lechalek. Three people sit down together to eat, even though they have not eaten yet, they are not able or they are not permitted to break up anymore. The Kviyut HaSuda is enough. Discussed this in the beginning of the Perek. There is a major machlokes to be shonim over here about what is considered to be a Kviyut. What makes you into a party of three that you can't break up anymore? So some say simply, like Pashup Shat here in the Gemara, sitting down. Three of you sit down together, that's enough. Others say it means making the bracha of Amotzi together. You have to make a bracha of Amotzi together in order to force the Zeman and say you can't break up. Others say you have to actually eat something. We'll see, because there are other alternatives here to what the Chiddush is. You actually have to eat something together. And again, to be mitzdarev to the Zimun, the Rishonim also discussed, do you have to start the meal together? Do you have to end the meal together to make it a Zimun? Or is it enough that you just get together for the bracha? It seems to be the Shita of Rashi earlier on, that simply if you all show up and you're ready to bench together, that's enough. So how much connection do you need between the parties in order to make a Zimun, in order to obligate a Zimun? That's a machloket Rishonim. Over here you see one of the extremes, which is, even when you just sit down together, and you kovei asura together, that's enough to obligate you in a zimun. Okay, and most of the Rishonim, the Rabbeinu Yonah and others say here, it means that you have to make a bracha of amotzi at least. You have to do something that makes you a party together. But that is very little that obligates you in terms of putting you together. I mean, even eating a morsel together, you're already obligated because you started the meal together. So other possibilities are, lech nachlina, amri abba, amr shmo achiktani, kimo shiyashvu lechol kachat, even though each one of them eats from their own loaf of bread, they're breaking their own bread, they're not allowed to break up. So here, again, there's another chiddush here, which is that even though they're eating from their own food, they're not sharing in anything that's on the table, there's no joint meal together. In fact, the simple fact that they're sitting together is enough to obligate them in the zimun, to make them a single unit. So this often comes up with, for instance, at dining rooms, yeshivot, when you go to eat in the yeshiva, everybody's taking their own tray, everybody comes to sit down together. Are you classified as a zimun or not classified as a zimun? Is the whole dining room considered to be one unit or not? So this relates to these questions of when you sit down and what the intent of an individual sits down is. Are they really intending to join with everybody in the dining room? Or they're simply eating with the couple of people that's around them. Or even if they're sitting with the people around them, they can leave, people leave and come to the table independently with their own trays, with their own food. This relates to this question of when is it considered a zimun? Inami, the other chiddush, possible chiddush from our Mishnah is Giada Rav Huna, that which Rav Huna said, Dam Rav Huna, Gimel Shabo Mi Gimel Chaburot In Rishayim L'Chalik. Three people who come from three different Chaburot, they cannot break up. So Rashi explains, this is based on the next line, Amar Rav Chista, Bahu Shabo Mi Gimel Chaburot Shal Gimel Bnei Adam. So as they came from three different groups of three, they had three groups of three, and each of these people broke away from that group. And now they join together without eating. They haven't done anything together. They just come together. They come together, they can bench because they're already chayam and zimun when they were together with their old groups. And when they get together, they still have to discharge that obligation of zimun. And Rashi says, "Afilu lo achlu el shlosha mishum starvu yachad." Even they do nothing together, even they eat nothing together, they still have to bench together to discharge their obligation as a zimun. Now the difficulty with this, So the difficulty with this is that they've dropped the other people. The other two people now are left without a zimun. So what's the story with the other people that they left behind? And second of all, is that enough to simply show up together and be together? Why is that enough? So again, this comes back to the machlokes Rishonim about what is considered a tziruv. Some of the Rishonim are going to argue that you have to eat something together. You have to do at least something together. Rashi, again, seems to indicate that it's enough just to be together for the bracha. That's enough to make you into a zimun. You don't have to do anything else besides come together to be, make the bracha birkat hamazon. That makes you already a zimun. Others are going to require you to eat. Rashi specifically says, afilu lo achlu. But not all the Rishonim are going to agree to that. Other Rishonim are going to say you're going to have to eat in order to be together. Now, the other problem is what David raised, which is that you left all the people behind. The other groups, you're leaving them behind. So that's another question about the Rishonim. How many people are in the other groups? Rashi indicates that there are three people in the other groups, and this person breaks away. There are others, like Rabbi Chilmi Paris, who suggests that there are four people in the other groups. and you're breaking away and leaving three behind. So when you leave those three behind, then you get together in the middle. The problem is the next line in the Gemara. The next line of the Gemara, if you explain this part of the Gemara in a bit easier or more plausible way, the next part of the Gemara becomes much more difficult. So Rashi's explanation makes the next part of the Gemara easier to explain, but then all the Rishonim are going to say about Rashi, Pshita. The next line of the Gemara is clear, which is, Amar Rava, V'lo Amron el-dlo akdimu hanach v'izmon alayu b'dichtayu. That's only true if the others that they left behind don't bench with them. Aval azmin alayu b'dichtayu parok zimun minayu. If they already benched based on them, then the Zimun goes away. So we'll continue with Rashi's explanation, although it's not clear that Rashi continues the explanation. He seems to jump issues here. Rashi seems to say there are four left in the other group now, all of a sudden. But leaving that aside, let's assume that there were three in the original group. One in each group, one person leaves. So the two that are left behind, they want to bench. We saw earlier in the Perek that you're allowed to call out to the one, the third one, and he answers. So you can force the third one to answer you, and they make a Zimun. So that's what they did. The two people left behind, they benched with a Zimun, and they made the third person bench and answer to them. So even though the third person answered, once he answered, right, he's already done with his Zimun. So when he comes together with the three again, you can't make another Zimun. Can't double up your Zimun. Now, that's the one explanation of this Gemara. Now, that fits well with Rava. It's an easy way to explain Rava. But what's the problem? The problem is Pshita, of course. If you made a Zimun with the group that you left, then why should you be able to make a Zimun when you got together again? Now, if you eat again, okay, that makes sense. Because then you're starting a new meal. It's as if you started a new meal. So maybe over there you would have to bench. Then you're going to say maybe there's a Chiddush here. But for the way Rashi explained it before, that you're not eating together. You simply got to, you were three originally, you left them behind, there's two behind, and they benched, and they included you. Why would there be any Hava Mino to say that over here you should have to bench together in the middle? For that reason, Rav Chilmi Pariz goes the other way, which is Rav Chilmi Pariz says that the original group had four. The original group has four, you break away. So they're left behind, they can bench without you. Now, when they bench without you, so fine, you get together in the middle, you make a Zimun. All of a sudden, Rava comes and says, wait a minute, if those three people bench without you, you're out of a Zimun. So that's a huge Chiddush. Rav Chilmi Pariz makes Rava into an unbelievable Chiddush. Rav Chilmi Pariz says that if you were originally part of a group of four, you leave that group and they bench without you. You lose your Zimun. You lose your obligation of Zimun. Your obligation of Zimun was together with them. And since you were together with them, then they do the Zimun, you're done. Your Zimun, your obligation of Zimun is gone. So it'll only work if you bench before them. If you leave, each of you leaves your group of four, comes to the middle, or come together. If you bench then, you're fine. Because you're before they bench the Zimun of your original group. But if your original group makes a Zimun, you're out. Your Zimun's over. So that's Rabbi Chilmi Pariz. Now again, Rabbi Chilmi Pariz makes it easier to understand the first Gemara when you left the group of four. I understand now, because you left three behind. It's fine. But now in the Chiddush of Rava, it becomes a massive Chiddush. That when three people bench, and you were a part of that group originally, you lose your Zimun.
Even if you eat something with the new group?
Alright, that might be questionable. If you eat something with a new group, that might be different. But that's not the way we're explaining it right now. Right now we're explaining that you simply get together. It's still amazing. What's amazing is that you've lost your obligation of Zimun even though you didn't participate in the Zimun. You did nothing. You weren't in the Zimun, and yet you're going to lose your Zimun. So the Rabbeinu Yonah brings down both Rashi's pshat and the Rabbi Chilmi Pariz's pshat. He brings both of them down. And he says, that's difficult to say that. So he explains like this idea in Rashi, although he claims Rashi is like Rabbi Chilmi Pariz here. But nevertheless, he explains this idea that there were three originally, and the original two that they left behind, benched with them. So then what's the Chiddush? B'nira says, Afal pi sheshama birkat hazimun, lo yatza mizimun, sheno nitkavin letzait, el shekaru oto achirim shishmai zimun, kedei leftor et atzman. The Rabbeinu Yonah comes up with this in-between type of case, which is that you have to, if you hear the zimun, the other two can be yotze with that zimun. But you had no intention to be yotze with that. So even though, because you had no intention to be yotze, despite that fact, you lose your ability to make the zimun. Even though you had no intention to be yotze with that zimun, nevertheless, if the two include you in their zimun, you lose it. V'afa gav damrina, even though we said earlier in the parak shlosha she'achlu ekeachad mafsik l'shnayim, right? If two want to leave and there's one there, you stop and you do the zimun. V'niftiru shloshtam b'zimun, and everybody's yotze with that zimun. Zeu b'nei she'omedi mahem. That's only because he was sitting with them. Aval b'kan she'en omedi mahem. So that's the Chiddush of the Rabbeinu Yonah, that you have to be seated with the Zimun to be Yotze with the Zimun. They call you and you're in the shuk, and they're including you for the zimun, even though you hear, you answer and you hear it. They are yotzei the zimun, you are not yotzei the zimun, because you're not sitting there. Despite the fact that they're not yotzei the zimun, you cannot go and bench again, because you lost your chiyuv of zimun. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Yona explains it. So those are three ways to explain this Gemara, about what the chiddush is. Either the chiddush is, and it's not such a big chiddush then, that the people broke away from groups of three, they came together in the middle. Over there, the chiddush, according to Rashi, is that you don't have to eat anything, you don't have to do anything, you simply get together, and then you can bench together. What happens to the people you left behind? That is problematic in that pshat. Rava says, if you already benched with the group, the original group, meaning that if they called out to you, included you, you're out of luck. If Rav Chilmi Pariz, who says the original groups are made up of four, and you left those groups of four, got together and benched, fine, the chiddush is in Rava. Rava says if they already benched, the group of three that left behind benches, you lose out your ability to bench. Even though now you're together and you never benched with a zimun, you still can't be a zimun. That's Rav Chilmi Pariz. Rabbeinu Yonah is a play on that first explanation, which is, it's three and they called out to you to bench to join them. Rabbeinu Yonah says the chiddush is that you're not yotzei. The person they call out to is not yotzei the zimun. Despite the fact that you're not yotzei the zimun, you can't make a new zimun. Because you already joined the first group, your obligation dissolved with the first group, and you can't make a new zimun here. Again, Rashi explains in all these cases, it's a case where they got together, they didn't eat together. Obviously, if you ate together, the story would be differently. If they all came together and then ate again, that might obligate you separately with the new group, and not simply rely on the zimun from the original group. Right? Amar Rava, Allah, how can I prove to you this idea that once the original group benches and does the zimun, that it eliminates the chiyuv or the obligation on the people who left? That's not mita shenignava chetzia, oshav da chetzia, you have a bed that's tamei, half of it was stolen, or half of it was lost, oshechilku achim, or was divided up in his state, oshutafim, or partners broke it up, torah, it's tahor, and that it no longer functions as a bed, a kli that is tamei, if it no longer functions with the utility that it had before, it loses its tumah. So it's over here, the bed's not functioning as a bed. You took half the bed here, half the bed there, it's the heart. Now what happens, zeruah, they put it back together. Mikabelet mitumah, mikano lahaba. When you put it back together, it's not the tumah comes back. It now is a kli again. It's a utensil that has utility. Now that utensil has utility, it can be mikabel tumah. But it's only prospectively. It doesn't become tameh again from the original tumah. Mikano lahaba in lamafreya lo. Prospectively, yes. Retroactively, not. Alma, from what do you conclude? When you break up the bed, the tumah goes. Same thing in our case. When you break up the zimun, and they already made the zimun, your obligation goes, even if you're not there, even if you're not included. So for Rav Chilmi Pariz, that means that if three people benched, and you were the fourth person, you're out of luck now. You can't discharge your zimun with other people. Even if they came from other groups that were obligated, because they broke up the zimun. Your original group broke up. When they broke it up, the obligation dissolves, just like the bed, when it's broken, loses its shame tuma. And when you put it back together again, it doesn't become tamei like it used to be. It's only prospectively. So to over here, when this group of three gets together, there's only a prospective zimun, not a retroactive zimun over here. Okay, and according to Rashi and others that explained it, we're talking about a group of three. Coming from three, it's obvious that if you bench with the first group, that your zimun is gone. The chiddush of the Rabbeinu Yonah will be, even though you were not yotzei, you lose your ability to make a zimun. Beit HaChaburot says in our Mishnah that you have two groups of individuals eating in a single house. Tosafot points out over here, it does not have to be in a single house, it could even be in two houses that they're eating. Tanam yesh shamash b'nehem, shamash mitzarfan. If you have someone serving the meal, and he's serving both groups, even though they cannot see each other, since the service is common between them, they can bench together, assuming they can hear each other. Assuming that when one group benches, the other group can hear, then they can become a single unit for benching. They're not obligated to become a single unit, but they can. It's given the option of being a single group, because the shamash, the one who's serving them, is mitzareif them, brings them together into a single unit. So as Tosfos points out, that could be within a single house, or even within two houses. If you have two neighboring houses and their shamash is working between both of them, then they can join together as long as they can hear each other when they are mivarech. Okay, ein mivarchim al yayin. The Mishnah says you don't make a bracha on yayin. Tamar banan. Yayin, achlo natan l'tocho mayim, ein mivarchim al abori pri agofen. Until you put water, until you dilute the wine chai is very strong, it needed to be diluted. Until you dilute it, you don't make a bracha bori pri agofen because it hasn't left its original state, and therefore you make a bori pri eitz, el bori pri eitz. Now here there's a girsa question. Argbar reads, v'notlim yimen al yadayim. And you can use it for netilat yadayim because it simply may peirot. And may peirot, you can use for netilat yadayim. Mishnatan tochumayim. Once you put water into it, mevarchim alav bori pri agofen. Then you can make a bracha bari piyagavin ve'ein notli mimenu liyadayin. And then you can't use it for netilat yadayim anymore because it's yayin. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Doesn't matter whether it's yayin chai, if it's undiluted wine or diluted wine, you make a bari piyagavin ve'ein notli mimenu liyadayin. And either way, you do not wash your hands with it. Come on, azlo ha damar Shmuel. Who does this member of Shmuel go like? Osei adam kol tzrachav bepat. Person can use bread for whatever utility he wants. Not just for food, not just for eating. Come on, Rabbi Eliezer. That's like Rabbi Eliezer, because we saw before that Rabbi Eliezer says you can use wine for washing your dayim. Now, the question is about the girsa here. You can see the little aleph, which is the gra. Rashi over here brings an alternative girsa from the Bahag, and he rejects the girsa because he says, I checked up on the Bahag. Bahag had a different girsa. It seems Bahag got the girsa from the Tosefta. But Rashi says, I went and looked in the Tosefta, and the Tosefta has the same exact girsa as our Gemara. The Gra says the problem is that the Tosefta also has the wrong girsa. He says he can prove it from the Yushalmi that the girsa is backwards here. And the way it should read is, when it comes to wine that is undiluted, undiluted wine, you make a bracha boi priyates, and ein notlim yadayim, and you're not allowed to wash your hands from it. If you dilute the wine, then it becomes boi priya gofen, and you can, C-A-N, you can wash your hands with that wine. And then the Chachamim say ben kach, you cannot wash. What's the makok between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim? The makok is whether you're allowed to use food for utility besides eating. Rabbi Lezer says you can use wine to pour on your hands to wash with, because it's one of the mashkim. It's one of the seven mashkim. You can use it for washing in the tilat yadayim. Mei peirot you can't, but yayin you can. The Chachamim come along and say you can't use yayin, not because it's not a mashke, but because it's ibur ochlim. You're wasting food. And not allowed to waste food. And that's the continuation of the Gemara. The next piece of the Gemara makes a lot more sense when you read it with this girsa, because the Gemara asks, who does the statement of Shmuel go like that? You can do whatever you want with bread. You can use it for every utility you want, even not eating. But it says like Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer doesn't believe you can use food for things besides eating. Wine, you can wash your yadayim with wine. Bread, you can use it for whatever you want. The Chachamim disagree. And that's why the Gemara posed the question in that manner. So again, Rashi has a girsa of the Bahag that says what the Gra just said now. He rejects that girsa. Tosafot also rejects the girsa. But the Gra insists that that's the proper girsa based on the Yushalmi. And again, it makes a lot more sense in the continuation of the Gemara if you have the girsa that way, because then the question of the Gemara makes sense in the continuum. Who's the author of the position that you're allowed to use food for things other than eating? That's Rabbi Eliezer, because we just proved it from the previous piece. So now Gemara says, Modim, Amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, Modim Chachamina Rabbi Eliezer, Bekosho Bracha. It's a Kosho Bracha that you're going to make, or you're going to bench on, that you're going to say Kiddush on, Abdullah on, they agree they have to dilute it. Shem Revachim Elavaj Yitenu Tochumayim, you don't make the Bracha until you put water in it, my timer. Vosha Beina Mitzvah Mina Mufchar. You want the best. Chumi agree that wine that's undiluted is not as good as diluted wine. They still think it's wine, they just don't think it's the best wine. When it comes to Kosho Bracha, we want it to be the best. Mitzvah mina mufchar. Rabbanan the Maichazi. According to Rabbanan, what is undiluted wine good for? It's good for a koraiti, which is some sort of species of dates that I guess they used to mix the wine with the dates, and therefore it was good as a food for that. It had utility with these dates, and that's why you make a bracha on it. Tosafot says, b'chein alocha, that is the alocha. And he brings the Gemara in Psachim that says, shatan chai. If you drink the arba kosher chai, undiluted, yatsa. That you're yotzei. So you see that undiluted wine is classified as wine, and you're yotzei with it, but it's not mitzvah mina muvchar. It's not the best way to do the mitzvah. Tarabanan, dal dvarim nemru bepat. There are four things that were said about bread. Eminichim basar chai lapat. You cannot put raw meat on bread. Ve'im avrin kos malei lapat. You should not pass a full glass of liquid above, over the pot. You don't throw the bread. And you don't put your plate or the serving dish on top of the bread. The basic idea that pot is chashuv. It's very important. It's significant. And we don't want it to go to waste. All these things can cause it to go to waste. If you put raw meat on the bread, it'll become soggy and disgusting. Nobody will eat it. You pass liquid over the bread. You spill the liquid. The bread will no longer be edible or appealing. You don't throw the bread because maybe it'll get messed up. It'll fall on the floor. It'll get into something dirty. And you don't put a kara. You don't put a serving dish on top of it again for the same problems. They broke bread together, the three of them. They brought in front of them fruits, dates, and pomegranates. Rav Zutra took a piece of meat and he threw it in front of Rav Ashi. Threw it to Rav Ashi. Don't you subscribe to the Braita in Zokimet Ochlin? You're not supposed to throw food. What are you throwing food for over here? It says, oh, Bepatanyo. It says, that's written about bread. Can't throw bread because bread is choshu. But any other item you can't throw. Bepatanyo, kishim shein Zokimet Apakach in Zokimet Ochlin. We have another Braita that says explicitly, just like you can't throw bread, you can't throw any food. Amalei, Bepatanyo. Then we have an opposite Braita. Apapi shein Zokimet Apat, apa Zokimet Ochlin. Even though you cannot throw bread, you're allowed to throw other foods. Elolokasho. How do we reconcile between the two braitot? Habemide de mamais, habemide de lo mamais. It depends on whether the item will become disgusting by throwing it. Solid items that, when they're thrown, do not become mushy, do not get messed up, that you're allowed to throw. Items that will become mushy, disgusting, inedible, less appealing when you throw them, like soft fruits and such, there you're not allowed to throw them. Again, bread you can't throw in any instance. Generally, it was brought separately to each of them. It seems like he had a piece of meat that he wanted to give to Rav Ashi. Sounds like, I don't know the exact circumstance, but that's what it sounds like happened here. So he ended up throwing it. Generally, we don't do this, and the Gemara is going to bring proof to this, that when there are issues of the food getting ruined, like falling on the floor today where someone may not eat it after it falls on the floor, then obviously you can't throw. It's just not respectful or respect towards the food. The Gemara says, Tanrabanan, M'shichin yayin b'tzinurot ufei chatan b'dehei kala. You're allowed to pour wine down the pipes in front of the chatan and kala. It was a type of entertainment, expression of a mazel tov, of shefa, of cornucopia, of pouring wine through the pipes in front of the chatan and kala. As Rashi points out here, because they used to have a collection bin at the bottom. They used to collect the wine. So the wine wasn't going to Ibud because they were keeping the wine. Even though they were using the wine for this entertainment or for a Siman Mazel Tov, it was not going to Ibud. You can throw nuts, roasted nuts.
Or wheat kernels.
And walnuts in front of them. That's only true if it's in the summertime. Not in the wintertime. Because in the wintertime, the ground is wet and muddy. And if you throw the nuts, they're going to get all ruined. Avalo gluskot. You can't throw cakes or pieces of delicacies. Lo bimotachamav, lo bimotachamim. Not in the summer, not in the winter, because they are going to get ruined. And Tosafot points out, miyu achshav, in our day, shudarkam nizrok chitim bebeit chatanim. They throw wheat in the house of the groom. Tzarik lizaher, shalo yizrokum elu makom naki. Make sure you only throw them in clean places, because otherwise, you have this problem of ibud ochlim. So the Gemara discusses here is that you're allowed to use ochlim for entertainment, for other things besides eating, as long as the food won't lose its your ability or utility as a food, and then it can be eaten afterwards. So you're allowed to use the food for these alternatives as long as the food doesn't get ruined by these alternatives. What happens if someone puts food into their mouth and they did not make a bracha? You push it to one side, and then you make the bracha. There's another bread that says you swallow them. Tanyidach, and a third brayta says, Potan, you spit them out. V'tanyidach, misalkan, and the third brayta, which is similar to the statement of Rabbi Yehuda, which is you put them to the side. So you have three options. Spit it out, swallow it, or put it to the side. Lokash, the Gemara explains, what are the three options here? Ha, the tanya bol'an b'mashkin. The one that says you swallow them is with liquids. But with liquids, you have no choice now. What's your choice with liquids? Either to spit it out, you spit out liquids, they're ruined. Nobody's gonna drink that again. You can't push them to the side, because you can't say the bracha then. When you push them to the side and you fill up your cheek, you're not going to have the ability to make the bracha anymore, because the liquids are going to spill out as you're speaking. So therefore, what's your only choice is the volan. You swallow them. Hadatanya poltan, the one that says you spit them out, b'midi lo ma'is. Something that won't become disgusting. It's a hard object. Like, for instance, there's like a hard candy. Something like that, gum. You can take it out of your mouth, it won't become disgusting by removing it. Take it out, you make the bracha. The one that says you push them to the side is b'midei d'mais. Something that would be disgusting if you took it out. I mean, if you have some sort of soft item, that if you took it out of your mouth, it would become disgusting when you took it out, and you would no longer eat it, that you push to the side and you make the bracha. So midei d'lo ma'mais, namilisuklinu l'tzad echad. Something that doesn't become disgusting, why spit it out? Just push it to the side. Why are we demanding that you spit it out? B'lavarech. If pushing it to the side is sufficient, then why spit it out? Targum Rabbi Yisrael Kaska Kamed Rabbi Yosi Baravin Mishmed Rabbi Yochan Mishum Shenamar. Because it says, Imalei Pi Tilatecha, that my mouth should be filled with your praise. So that's the principle that one should not be davening when they're chewing gum or have a candy in their mouth, because your mouth should be full of the praises of Hashem. There should be nothing else in your mouth. If I have an option to make it that way and to say the bracha without anything else in my mouth, I'm going to opt for that option. So in a case where it's not disgusting to take it out, we're going to say take it out. Where I have no choice, and if I take it out, the food's going to be ruined, then I say push it to the side and make the bracha. Even though it's not the optimal solution. And that's why the Gemara doesn't offer that solution for something that's midi d'lamais, because it's not the optimal solution. The optimal solution is to have a clear mouth and to have an empty mouth in order to say the praises of Hashem. Someone who ate and drank, but didn't make a bracha, bracha rishona. Can they go back and make the bracha rishona later on? The answer is amazing. I love his answer. Certain a person who ate garlic and his breath stinks. Could they should eat more garlic so his breath stinks even more? What's the point of adding insult to injury? If you didn't make a bracha when you first ate, what, are you going to keep eating without making a bracha? No, you make a bracha and then you continue to eat. There's no reason not to make a bracha now. What's done is done. What you did wrong is done wrong. Now if you're going to eat, I got to make a bracha to continue to go forward from this point forward. It's like just like the mashal. If you eat garlic and your breath stinks, to eat more garlic, it's not going to make your breath any better. It's not going to make the situation better. The same thing I say with regards to fast days. People always think, oh, if I steak, someone ate on a fast day, oh, I ate already, I should continue to eat it. That's not right. If you ate, you made a mistake. You continue to fast afterwards because it has nothing to do with the fact that you ate already. So the same idea here. Do not add insult to injury. So Ravina suggests over here that even if you finished eating completely, you can still make the bracha. The Tanya. You only make a bracha on a tevila after you went to the mikveh. You go to the mikveh, you come out, you're tahor. So then you only make the bracha afterwards. The Gemara says, what type of comparison is this? Well, oh, the two cases are not parallel. When he's going into the mikveh, he's someone's not ra'ui to make a bracha. That's why he has to make the bracha only after he comes out of the mikveh. Over here in the original situation, he was ra'ui to make the bracha. He didn't make the bracha. And now he's done with his meal, he can't make the bracha. Now he was nidche. He should have made the bracha earlier. If he didn't make it, then there's no longer the ability to make it. So again, as long as you have more to eat in the meal, you can make the bracha then on what you have to eat. If you finish the meal, you cannot make the bracha. Tzvila, no, you can't do it. Now why is it that he's a garbage lo chazi? A person who's tamei can make brachot. There's no problem with being tamei and making a bracha. Rashi claims that rov tovlim balei kerian. That most of the people who go to the mikveh are balei keri. And we saw before that Baal Keri is not allowed to make a bracha. So he's not allowed to make a bracha, therefore he couldn't make the bracha before and he has to make it afterwards. Tosafot says that doesn't seem to make sense. And therefore Tosafot says that the case is a filat a ger. Filat a ger who goes to the mikveh to become a Jew, to convert. When he goes into the mikveh, he's garbed lo chozi. He's not roi because he's not Jewish. When he comes out of the mikveh, then he's a Jew, then he can make the bracha. Ah, what about all other times people go to the mikveh, there should be no problem. Tosafot says it's a low plug. The Chavim instituted a low plug because of Tevilat Ager. There are certain instances where a person is not ra'ui to do it, and therefore, because of that one case, they made all brachas of Tevilah afterwards. He says the same thing is true of Netilat Yadayim. Why do we make a bracha of Netilat Yadayim afterwards? Because sometimes the person goes to the bathroom, and then they wash their hands, and they're not ra'ui to say the bracha until they've washed the Yadayim. Once they've washed the Yadayim, then they can make the bracha, because they've gone to the bathroom, now they can't make a bracha. They'll only make the bracha after they wash the Yadayim. So Tosafot says, low plug. Every time we wash our Yadayim now, we make bracha afterwards, even though you were a gabaroi. Now, you want to go eat a meal right now? Wash Yadayim? You should be able to make the bracha beforehand over the Siyatan. No, because of the instance where you have a problem, which is that you go to the bathroom, and then you wouldn't be roi to make the bracha until after the Tilat Yadayim. Therefore, in all cases, in Tilat Yadayim, make a little plug, you wash your hands, and then make the bracha. Same here with Tevila. Everybody makes the bracha on Tevila afterwards, not before, because of the Tevila Ta Ger. Okay, we'll stop over here.